Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 78 of the Weekly Long Box. I'm Todd, joined as always by Leonard. How you doing today, Leonard?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm feeling much better today than I am a week ago today.
Oh, you sound so much better. You sound very baritone and strong.
Yes, the cough is almost completely gone. I had to get doped up on a ton of medication, but I'm feeling great.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear it. I had a busy weekend of wheeling and dealing on shows and movies, trying to talk about trying to get somebody to watch something and him to get me to watch something. We're doing Pacific Rim and Fast and Furious, which I don't think is going to happen. And we're debating if I watch Community, he'll watch Arrested Development. So that seems like more of a good deal than the other.
That's a win-win for all parties. Community is really good, and is this Adam Van?
Yep, this is Fancy Gentleman right there.
A Fancy Gentleman Adam Van.
Yeah,
and he's adverse to watching Arrested Development.
No, he's never watched it. He's heard good things about it. I think he said he watched it when it was first on, but he didn't get into it right away.
So, gotcha.
And I watched Community when it was first on, and the first couple episodes I watched, and I thought it was all right. And then I don't know if they moved it or I missed an episode and I lost it. So he got me to watch the three paintball episodes.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, I'm going to go back and watch this. And now I have to see when we watch some TV this week, next weekend, if I bring Arrested Development over, if he'll watch some of it or if he'll just be like, I got you to watch Community. I'm not doing it because he's that way.
That seems like a shady deal.
It does. It does. So how was your weekend?
My weekend was good. It was, Mother's Day stuff, my wife's birthday. Lots of sleeping. I was actually out of the house for once in my life, on a non-wrestling occasion. First time out with the wife since October.
Ooh, a romantic day out.
Oh, yes. Went to the movies and everything.
Oh, so you saw it?
I did. I think it's best to save that for the end of the show, just in case any of our listeners didn't get a chance to see it. I don't want to be that spoiler person, you know?
Yeah, I know how it is. But we do have a lot to talk about today.
We do.
Yes, we do. We have what books are getting the axe. Lots of TV talk, who's getting paid, who's not, stuff like that. And we also have why I have to stay off the internet for a week.
You didn't get put on a list, did you?
No, I didn't get put on a list. But if somebody does something, I may get put on a list.
Oh, boy.
We have also what we read last week. I think we cross over on everything but one book, which is the new creators on Suicide Squad I read this week. You didn't read that, right?
No, I have it waiting for me at the shop. It was one of those ones that I forgot this was the beginning of the new creative team.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Green Lantern stuff starts next month.
Right.
And as we'll get into later with the DC cancellations and things of that nature, you never know what the comings and goings of DC are, even no matter how hard you try. It's tough to keep up.
Yep. We have also what we're looking forward to this week, and it's a super small week for me this week. It's a tough one.
Yes, I don't think we're going to cross over on this one.
Either do I. We also have Sketch Party. There was some magnificent sketches on Sketch Party this week.
Yeah, definitely. And I have a story. I put mine up, and there's a story and everything.
Wow, I might let you tell a sketch story this week. And we also have our Twitter question, which was the dirt worst, I believe the way you put it, Justice League of America member ever.
Right. I say that a lot of times in regards to things in the world of wrestling. And when I tweeted it out from the account yesterday, I said, who is the dirt worst? I think last week on the show, I said, who's the shame of the Justice League?
Right.
And I got a couple people who are very wrong in their answers.
Yes, they are. And I'm still up in the air. There's lots of ways I can go. I don't even know because I've been reading. I read Justice League for a lot of years.
See, this one for me was a very easy one, very straightforward, but we'll get into that all later.
Right, right.
So where would you like to begin with the news, my good man?
Would you like to start with TV?
Yes, a couple TV things going on. Now, we're going to avoid the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff. What's the official title of the show? The Marvel S.H.I.E.L.D. ABC show. This past week was all the announcements of what shows are getting renewed on TV, which ones got picked up for series. You know, all that sort of thing. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the new Marvel-related thing.
Oh, see, I thought that was the Michael Chiklis show coming back.
Right.
But
right.
It wasn't, no. I haven't watched it.
No, I was going to say, the internet is littered with trailers and teasers and information about the show.
Yeah.
I am not going to look at or read any of it. I'm just going to wait for the show to come on. I know it's going to be Tuesdays, and that's all I know.
Ooh, that's going to be interesting. Yeah, I know I'm going to watch it, so I don't have to look into any of it. I'm with
you. That puts a damper on our time, huh?
Yeah, you know what? My time's starting to scrunch together. I mean, I know you have all the free time in the world.
Oh, yes.
So, but me, you know, like, Tuesday's a busy night for me. But hopefully I'll find the time.
We'll figure out something.
Mm-hmm.
So, the two news stories, the one that makes me sad, I guess, in a way, is the Cullen Bunn, Brian Hurt series, The Sixth Gun, which was originally going to be sci-fi, and then NBC optioned it for series on the main network. They did not pick it up as a show.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Hurt and Cullen Bunn both seem to be okay with that. You know, these things happen, I guess. I'm sure they probably got a couple bucks.
They had to, I would guess, if they optioned it.
Right. I'm sure they got a couple bucks out of the deal. And as Cullen Bunn himself said, they still get to make awesome comics together. So, yes, I'm okay with this. You know, if they're okay, I'm okay. I like when a creator's okay with the decisions made regarding their show and that they're not going to be all angry and bitter for no cause in situations like this.
Let's see if they're angry and bitter. And I've said this before, in a few months when the show that's like the show but not quite like Six Gun comes out, we'll see how angry and bitter they are.
You mean the Seventh Pistol comes out?
Yes, yes.
Oh, boy. No, I don't know if that's more of an ABC thing than an NBC thing to do.
Yeah, but you know what? Like I always say, copy an A, get an A. It's going to start moving around. All the companies are going to start doing it.
I certainly hope not. So one of the other bad stories that had come out in the last couple days was when Showtime was optioning Chew by John Layman to be made into a TV show. And if you know Chew, it was one of the big Image hits after The Walking Dead, way, way after The Walking Dead. There was a bit of a drought. Some can even point to that was the, you know, beginning of the renaissance at Image that they've seen over the last 3 or 4 years. Cop, and it's a whole world of people that have all different food-based powers where they can, tell the past, tell the future, all these different things by eating something, like telling its whole story. Got optioned into a TV show by Showtime. Showtime did not make the show. But again, that does happen from time to time. But the big story is that they still have not paid John Layman yet.
Which is insane. I mean, how long ago was that?
It's been at least 2 years.
He should have seen some shekels by now. I mean, that's a while. But I don't know. I mean, the bean counters over there at Showtime, who knows, you know, they got their Dexter going. That's all they care about.
I guess it's just so crazy to hear something like that happening, like a show like that getting optioned and then the folks just not getting paid.
Right. I mean, and it's bad that they have to say something about it, you know, because that's the only way anything's going to get done unless you sick the lawyers on them.
And sometimes that's what you have to do, but I think he was even saying, John Layman was saying on Twitter, that the amount of money that they would get and the amount of money that they would spend on lawyers wouldn't be cost-effective, and I think maybe that's what Showtime might be looking at.
Sure, because they're like, oh, we could either pay them, or we could use our, you know, they could sue us, and we could use our gaggle of lawyers that we're paying anyway to sit around on their, you know, their thumbs, so it's win-win for them.
Yeah, it still doesn't change the fact that it's a shame that these things happen.
Oh yeah, I totally agree. But you know, and they'll be even madder when like the show Culinary comes out and it's a ripoff of theirs.
You're a very cynical person today.
I am. When it comes to these big companies, you know, stealing the rights from the little guy. No, I just look at it that I've seen it before, and like you said, it was a lot of ABC, but I think we're going to see more and more of it as time goes on.
Ugh, unbelievable.
But anyway.
Anyway, so one last bit of TV stuff to talk about before we get into all the DC goings-on, as there always seems to be. there was a huge spoiler thing, and luckily I was away from the internet over the weekend a bit when it all came down. But apparently where it comes to is some folks who had pre-ordered the second part of the seventh series of Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
They pre-ordered, and I guess the DVD doesn't come out for a little while, but they ended up getting the DVD 2 weeks before the series even ended.
Right, because this Saturday will be the season finale, and then I think we were supposed to get the DVD, the second half, the Tuesday after the season finale. And I guess they started trickling in last Saturday and Monday. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know if they deliver on Sunday or whatever. But so people were getting them and starting to, you know, talk about what happened in the season finale, which isn't even, you know, on TV yet.
Which is pretty crazy. So I ask you, Todd, obviously I know how you feel about Doctor Who and I know how you feel about spoilers. I'm guessing that you did not look into this sort of thing.
No, I have stood down, you know, mostly, I have a lot of people, you know, who I follow on Twitter and Facebook. They really, I don't think any of them got it, so I don't have to really worry about that. So basically I have to stay off any news sites. And I've heard that somebody, you know, in their infinite wisdom decided to make sure that the Doctor Who Wikipedia page was up to date.
With all
this stuff, they were like, we got to get that up there because if people don't, you know about it, I'm going to be their Doctor Who information guy. And I'm like, really? Like,
that was a very insulting voice, by the way, that you just did there.
Oh, that's Dr. Ben Beeler from Futurama who found Fry's dog. He talks like that. So I'm hoping, you know, that I could stay away for another few days until Saturday or Sunday night when I can watch it.
So that was the other thing is, you know, as I had mentioned before, even when you're trying to avoid spoilers on something, sometimes they come into your purview. I was wondering if anyone stooged any of this information off to you, like unintentionally or maybe to be a jerk or...
No, nobody online, because that would be terrible if you were waiting for something and somebody just was throwing it up on your wall. But but me, like, my friends know. Most of my friends don't want to, like, who watch the show don't want to know either. And they know that there's, like, a death sentence to anybody who does it to me personally. And like I said, nobody was, you know, dumb enough to who was like, oh, Todd, on Twitter, have you seen this and this happened and that happened? And I'd be like, all right, you're blocked. You know what I mean? So far I'm good, but I have several more days to go.
Now, my question, I have a ton of questions in regards to this. Now, obviously this seems to me just a shipping error.
That's what I'm guessing. And a real quick thing with that, the showrunner who was doing it is like, oh my God, they killed us. So he's like, oh, because the 50th anniversary is coming up and we have a definite 11th and 10th Doctor crossover. He's like, if nobody spoils anything online, I'll do a nice little video with the 10th and 11th Doctor as a nice, you know, thank you. And it, you know, it wasn't even that night and people were spoiling it. So, but your question, sorry.
No, I was going to say, that's just the culture that we live in, is like, okay, it was a shipping error, obviously, the showrunners and everyone tried to get out in front of it, they're not the ones who made the mistake. You got to wonder, are heads going to roll for this?
Somebody's got to, because, I mean, that your whole thing of your season on TV is hanging on the season finale is like your biggest ratings getter. And people don't have to, a lot, because who knows how many people got these that pre-ordered them. You know, I'm not saying it's going to be a huge effect on it, but either way, that affects something. And then you have people who are, you know, off spoiling stuff and you know, ticking other people off. It just looks really bad all around. There's no way you can go, this is really good. I know any publicity is good publicity, but, you know, it doesn't help your cause.
So it's just very sad to see that because I know how diehard the fan base is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, even when we were doing the show notes, I had sent the information to Todd, just kind of general information, and he wouldn't even click on the links just to make sure that what I had sent him did not have spoilers in them.
Right, and I know that you might have thought that I was taking a jab at you, but I was looking at
No, I didn't think you were taking a jab at me. I didn't even think, you know, I saw the link, and I'm like, all right, that's just going to go in the links. We'll end up talking about it. And I didn't even check the link to see what it would say in there.
Right, and my thing was, like, as you not a fan, you don't know what a spoiler could be. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
They could just have so-and-so's in this episode, and you'd be like, oh, like, to me, that's nothing. But to me, that's like, oh, my God, you know, like, that's a huge what the heck happened. And I'm trying to look for the name of the actual name of the link that you put down was Doctor Who Spoilers. So when I'm reading it, I go, do I look at this? And then in the link it says blah blah blah, you know, spoilerish Doctor Who pictures confirm more rumors. I'm like, I'm not clicking that. I don't know what that is. So that's kind of why I asked.
But we were able to talk about it without you having looked at anything, and I looked at the links, and I'll be honest with you, I have no idea what any of it means.
Right. So when you told me what was in there, it was mostly about them shipping early. I'm like, there might be. So I never clicked on it. I figure once you gave me the gist of what we were going to talk about, I'm like, I'm done. I'm out. Peace. You know?
Right. All right. So getting back to comic book stuff, the DC August solicitations have come out. The rest of them will be out. All the other major companies will be out by the end of the week. But DC always gets out a little bit early. These start trickling out on Friday. A bunch of cancellations to no surprise, I guess, because it seems like there's always cancellations every month with the DC solicitations. This time around for August, it is Dial H, which is getting a wrap-up with issue number 15. That's been causing a lot of, I don't want to say strife, but a lot of discussion online, just people essentially saying since this was originally going to be a Vertigo book, if this was a Vertigo book and didn't have to be so closely tied to the DCU, it might have lasted a little bit longer. Threshold number 8 is the last issue. I think that's, you know, with the beginning of the Larf Lees book, this book doesn't really hold a purpose.
Yeah, and I think with last week's issue of Threshold was the last Larf Lees backup. So whatever issues we have are going to have a different backup. So I didn't see it long for this world.
Right. Demon Knights is canceled. That's one of the ones from the very beginning. That's getting its swan song there in August.
That makes me sad. That's a really good book. But I saw an interview with Venditti. He was saying he only came on to do 3 issues. And he was, like, having so much fun, and they liked it that he was, you know, like, going to be on that book. But, you know, the sales didn't do it. So I'm kind of glad that, like, you know, I like the Cornell run and then his run, and he gets to tell the story he wants. And, you know, some of these books, it's better maybe for them to go out on a high note than to limp along, you know, for issue after issue if you're waiting for the axe to fall.
And then the other book that is getting canceled is Legion of Superheroes. There's another one that's caused a lot of uproar. I think they're saying that with the end of this book, if it actually is the end of this book, this will be the first time that there hasn't been a Legion book continuously published for quite some time.
I guess. I don't know. I saw Mark Waid tweeting about that, but I don't know the numbers on that. I'd have to, you know who'd know? I'd have to ask Dave. He's a huge Legion fan to a certain point. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Like, people who were screaming about the Legion, you know, not getting this and that, that book has limped along for the longest time. It's been revamped and then, you know, retconned and rebooted. And now this run is like, oh, like those reboots and retcons, they didn't happen. This is the original Legion that everybody loves from the Silver Age continuation. So let's get all those fans back. I'm like, you know what? Legion has been the hardest book DC has ever had to be like new reader friendly. Just because of, like, a lot of times the names, I always felt like, you know, Tenzel Kem and stuff like that. These aren't names like Joe Smith or anything like that. It's hard to grasp your names around, like, oh, this guy's this guy and he's on this planet with these powers. I always felt that Legion was just always a really tough sell, and the more fans it lost, it was just, you know, an upward climb after that.
So for me, the two things that were very interesting, well, a couple things that are very interesting on it. The last issue is being written by Keith Giffen with art by Kevin Maguire, which means I'm sure you'll be picking it up.
Yep, maybe two. Who knows?
And the solicitation says Don't miss this landmark issue, as the true nature of the Legion is questioned, and the future of the DCU is changed in a way you'll never expect.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan DiDio said on his Facebook, because of course he has a very public Facebook page, a lot of people went there, and he said that while this may be the end of this Legion book, it is not the end of stories being told in the 31st century of the New 52. So does that mean it's just going to be a new book with a new name, that it's going to get a new number one? It'll be interesting to see.
And there's speculation, because it's Keith and Kevin, that they have something spinning out of this. I was reading on Kevin's Twitter that he finds it, you know, amusing that everybody's speculating, but, cause he's talking about how he has a new ongoing coming up, and, you know, who knows what Keith and Jam are doing. So hopefully maybe we'll see something from the three of them together in the New 52.
Certainly. So, yeah, it's those books, Dial H, of course, and Legion are the big ones getting the kerfuffle online. You know, Threshold. I tried Threshold. I didn't dig it the first issue. I like the Larfleeze stuff, and that's probably why it's getting spun out into its own separate book, which I'm going to be picking up.
I figured as much. I enjoyed Threshold. I thought it was fun. Wasn't a big Captain K-Rot fan, but it was... I just thought Threshold was better than it should have been, and I had fun with it. But that's Demon Knights I like. The other two, not so much.
So maybe I've been meaning to check out that Demon Knights, but there's so much stuff I have to check out. I'm still getting caught up on so much stuff these days.
I know what you mean. Mm-hmm. I'm all over the place too.
Yep. So, I think that covers it for the news from this past week.
Yes, it does.
Okay, so I just want to mention, of course, our digital freebie stuff that's available. Marvel always has a ton of new weekly stuff up there. They have the first issue of Scotty Young's Wonderful Wizard of Oz up there. I have that in the hardcover, the oversized hardcover, and that's just beautiful. I love his art. I'm a sucker for his stuff. Daredevil, Volume 2, Number 26, not the current Mark Waid run, the run that Todd refuses to acknowledge. It's very awesome stuff by Bendis and Maleev. That issue is up there for free.
Must be What If stuff.
And Amazing Spider-Man 682 is up there, and that is the first issue of the Ends of the Earth storyline, which is possibly when some of the stuff that we're seeing right now in Superior Spider-Man started to come up, even as far, you know, as far back definitely as 600. This in 682 is for sure tying into what's currently going on in Superior Spider-Man.
Interesting stuff. I've never read any of those.
And that's right before, I think that's like 2 months, that issue is 2 months before Marvel start doing the digital codes in all their $3.99 books. So,
there you go.
I was happy to get that one.
Free books, or cheap
free
books.
Free books. Now, free books, but cheap digital books.
Cheap books, sorry.
Yes. No, well, those are free. These are cheap.
No.
Cheap digital books this week on Comixology. There is a Valiant sale going on. Of the current Exo Manowar series, which a lot of people are a fan of. But more importantly, Todd.
Yes.
The entire run of Quantum and Woody is up there at 99 cents a clip.
That's good. That's a good bargain right there. Quantum and Woody. Somebody was asking me, or a DJ was asking me, he's like, oh, should I get Quantum and Woody? I'm like, yes, do it.
Yes. And that's one where I do not have the print run, so there was no question. I bought the run. Monday morning, I woke up, I saw it was there. My eyes were a little groggy. I didn't see that the sale was for the entire week, and I'm like, I gotta get this while the getting's good. So I just added the whole thing to my cart, and I was good to go.
Does it have the goat issue, too?
It does have the goat issue
awesome.
As well.
Awesome. Did they ever put those two unpublished issues up?
It does not appear so. Again, there's an issue 20 and 21.
Right.
That are in there. I don't know. Like, they have weird logos on the cover.
I think that's because it switched over to Acclaim at that point. So, I mean, Valiant Acclaim is the same thing. But I know when it switched over that the logos changed and stuff like that. And I know there's a 32, I think. There's an issue 32. Because that, when the book came back, it came back with the number of where it was supposed to be.
Okay.
And they were like, and it was where the story was supposed to be at the time. So you were like miles away from where we ended. And then they went, and then they went back and telling the story. And we were supposed to get to that point. But, you know, I think Acclaim closed their doors before we got that far. So they say there's two unpublished stories in there that were supposed to be on Comixology eventually. So I was wondering if they were there. You said you don't think so.
It doesn't appear so. What they have up is issues, issues 0 through 21. They do not have issue 32, and they have the GOAT special.
Hmm. Okay. I was hoping that they'd have that third. I don't remember if it was 32 or another number, but I thought that
it was. I double checked. It was definitely 32.
Okay.
Yes. So, yeah, check that out. I hear the Exo Manowar story is really good as well. And those are all on sale as well. Those are all still cover priced at $3.99, so you're getting them for like a third, like two-thirds the price.
Damn, it's a good deal.
And it's written by the aforementioned Robert Venditti.
Yeah. Yeah, he was doing that. And that makes me want to kind of read Exo Manowar. But I was never, like, other than Quantum and Woody, never really read any of the Valiant stuff.
Right.
So maybe this will get me in.
But I'm excited to dive into all that Quantum and Woody. That's a lot of stuff to read.
Yay.
But I have it, so I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. At your leisure, that's when you can do it.
Yes, indeed. So speaking of leisure, this past weekend I did have more leisure time than I would have liked because it was Mother's Day. Hopefully you, our listeners, partook in Mother's Day with your family, or if you had a birthday, as mentioned before on the show. I have no less than 300 birthdays in the month of May.
Yay, lots of birthdays.
It seems there's like 2, 3, 4 people all have birthdays on the same day. And no better gift to give someone for a birthday is a cake from our good sponsor at BakeMeAWish.com. They have all sorts of different options available to you that can be sent overnight during the week. I don't think they're going to overnight it on the weekends. But still, that is a great deal for any sort of cake, for any sort of reason. They have a vanilla bean cake, which is the cake of the month this week, and it just looks delightful. Oh. And in my opinion, if I ran this site, I'd be out of business because the only thing I would sell would be a chocolate cake with peanut butter icing.
See, you have a limited vision. That's why you're not.
That's right. No, I am very narrow-minded.
That's why you're not a cake mogul.
That's right. I'm just a comic mogul and a podcast aficionado.
There you go.
But no, all the cakes that are on there that I have tried personally, and it's been quite a few because I get them for people in my life, and then I say, oh, what a great cake. They say, thank you very much. Do you want to try it? And they say, of course I do. That's why I got it for you, because I want to eat your cake, and it's delicious.
That's a reason to live right there.
So check out our great sponsor at BakeMeAWish.com. And you don't even need to tell them that we sent you. Somehow they'll just know.
I can't see how they wouldn't.
It's by osmosis. There's no code that you have to click, you know, type in. There's no thing you have to click on. You just go there. They know it's us. And that's all.
And that's a good thing.
Right. So getting into the books from this past week, Todd, where would you like to begin?
I would like to begin, because I'm actually curious, on Batman and the Red Hood, because it was your cutoff issue kind of thing last week.
Okay, so we can't talk about Batman and Red Hood number 20 without speaking about Batman number 20.
Oh, okay.
Week number 2 is always a big Batman week. They sometimes mix things up a little bit, but it seems like with this 5-week month, they moved some of the week 2 Batman stuff to week 3. But 2 Batman books came out in the same week, and there are no less than 4-5 Batman books on a monthly basis. Batman, the Batman And book, Batman Inc., Detective Comics, and Batman The Dark Knight.
Right.
And as you may know, a big event just recently happened in the world of Batman. I think we're far enough removed that we can say that Damian, the Robin, Batman's son, the most recent Robin, was killed in Batman Inc.
Sad moment.
And the fallout has been happening here for the last 2 or 3 months in all of the Bat books. And all of the Bat books, I think, are handling them differently. And by that I say, I'm not reading every Bat book. I can't imagine everyone is. I have a friend of mine who's trying to, and I get daily texts from him lamenting of what a poor decision he made.
I'm only reading 2.
Right. Well, after this week, I am only reading two as well. Batman and the Red Hood, Batman and, was kind of hit or miss for me lately. It seemed to be having a little trouble finding its footing during the whole Death in the Family thing. It seemed their storyline was rushed, and then by the time they got into Death in the Family, while it was a cool-looking issue, the art was beautiful by Patrick Gleason, it didn't really fit into what was going on in the other books.
Right.
And that's understandable. Every book's got to tell its own story.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was the annual with Damian stuff. Then there was the post-issue to that, which was almost like the two silent issues.
Right, the one dream issue and then the silent issue, if I'm correct.
And both of those issues were, including the annual, were very good.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first issue after the whole Damian fallout, which was Batman and Red Robin, was not good. Batman was acting like a jerk. Batman was acting stupid. Batman was taking apart Frankenstein to try to get Frankenstein to show him how to turn Damian into a Frankenstein to bring him back. And then Red Robin shows up and says, "Hey, I don't think you should be doing this," and then leaves.
Yes, the afterthought Red Robin.
Right. So based on that issue, I said going into this issue of Batman and the Red Hood, this is going to be the make it or break it issue for me, and it broke it. This was a really bad issue of a comic book, let alone a Batman comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was made worse by the fact that Batman by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo came out in the same week. And I feel that that did a much better job of handling how Batman should and could be reacting to what's going on, as opposed to the pure stupidity that we saw in this issue.
I agree. The only thing that has me really interested in Batman and Robin is Batman and the Batman and book, obviously it's Red Hood this time, is the Carrie Kelly stuff. But you're right, the way he is handling Damian's death in this is almost over the top ridiculous at times. I understand, you know, like the mission that he goes on for the assassins, and I'm like, okay, I get it. But the way he deals with the assassins and the stuff he does, I'm just like, that's way over the top. I mean, it bothered me a few issues ago when he punched in the regular Batman book, he punched that girl in the face, and he just seems out of sorts. And I'm willing to give that for a little bit, maybe an issue, but it's starting to get really out of hand in the Batman and books. And I'm with you. Other than the Carrie Kelly thing, I don't know. I think I can give it one more issue, but I'm with you. I'm not big on this.
Yeah, the Carrie Kelly thing, you know, I have to talk spoilers on this one a little bit, only because I hope that by me speaking of this book, it will deter other people from reading this book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alfred giving her a job to take over to take care of the dog was really dumb.
Right.
Batman going on the mission with Jason Todd and, like, allowing him just to, like, straight up shoot dudes. Like, okay, rubber bullets, whatever. But, like, Batman, you know, the whole guy who's against guns and all that sort of thing, is just like, yeah, Jason Todd, no problem. Just shoot dudes with, you know, guns. Just make sure you don't kill them, buddy. Like, that's completely wrong. And then, like, taking him back to the scene of, you know, where he died and then them getting into the yelling fist fight. It was just all so dumb.
What? But he's taking the car, and he's going to leave the plane for... No, I see what you're saying, and I'm right with you. And then that brings me to Batman 20, which...
Right.
Is the way I'm with you, is the way he should be dealing with it. And like I said, he has that issue where a Harper Row, he punches her. I'm like, you know what? But if that was a one-time deal and he gets over it and now he's doing what he's doing at the end of this book, which I actually wanted to ask you because you were reading more Grant Morrison and Damian in it. He's looking at some sort of footage, I guess, at the end of the mm-hmm. book. Do you recognize any of the stuff that he's saying?
No, that's just kind of like an arbitrary made-up sort of thing.
All right, because, like, you know what I mean? Like, maybe it was a big moment in Batman Inc. or early on when Damian showed up in the Grant Morrison issues, which I was not reading. So I was like, either way, it's still I get what they're going for and really enjoyed it. And obviously, you know, by looking at the front of the book in last month, you know, his battle with Clayface was really cool. So I'm like, Batman is leaps and bounds better than the Batman And book right now.
Right. And that's what it comes down to is, why read subpar Batman books when they already print the best Batman book on a monthly basis?
Right. And are you reading another Batman book then, or just this one?
Well, I am reading Batman Inc., but that's kind of tying up here shortly. I think the last issue is August.
Right.
And that's, you know, more or less self-contained from everything else. And that is where all the Damian stuff is happening with Talia and all that sort of jive. So that's almost done, so I'm okay to ride that one out till it's a natural conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm okay letting the ship sail on the Batman And book by Tomasi. It's sad to see it go, but it's just not good.
Right.
I can't be buying bad comic books. That's a bad example.
Right, especially when there's so much good out there right now.
Right, and it's being picked up on the schedule, at least for me, with the August solicitations of the
Batman 66?
No, Batman 66 is the month before, but August has the Batman Beyond digital printing thing that's written by Christos Gage and Kyle Higgins.
Ah, okay. And there was a little, like, maybe some Batman Beyond nods in this that I thought was cool.
Yeah, it looked really cool, and I'm wondering where that's going to go, but yeah, Greg Capullo just draws everything so awesome. Like, his Clayface just looks cool as all get out.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, Batman by Snyder and Capullo, a friend of mine said that if they remain on this book and it remains at the quality that it is, this could be one of those legendary runs that people talk about for like 10, 15, 20 years from now.
I could see that.
Yeah.
We're trying to think, you know, when the last legendary run was, you know what I mean? So, at 20 issues, that's pretty good in this day and age right now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, there's a lot of, like, cult runs. Like, Greg Rucka had a good run on Detective.
Right.
You know, Denny O'Neil had some good runs on Batman in the late 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing that, like, is legendary.
True. Yep. Mostly it was, like, miniseries or one-shots that gets all the praise and accolades.
Right. But, like, not just, like, the legendary runs of Batman, but, like, one of the legendary runs of comics that people are going to talk about, like, for years to come.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were just talking about Batman. Got you.
Well, yeah, again, I'm talking about both. You know, I'm talking about both Batman and just a great run of a comic book.
Yep. I agree.
Like, here's two creators outside of, like, I think two issues that Capullo didn't do art on so far of the, you know, 2021 issues that we had. He is going to be doing all the art on Batman Zero, as far as we know. So there you go. You're going to be looking at almost, you know, over 3 years or nearly 3 years of them on this book together,
mm-hmm,
with only two fill-in issues. And that could just be one of those great runs.
Yep.
You know, that is, and I feel that way. And, I'm sure it will be. I really enjoy Snyder's Batman.
I do too. So I know exactly what you're saying, and I look forward to this year-long storyline.
Yes. So moving on to more books that are great that everyone should be reading, and that is Thor, God of Thunder, number 8.
Yes, everybody should be reading Thor, God of Thunder.
Yes, written by Jason Aaron with art by Asad Ribic. And this is the part 2 of the ongoing God Bomb storyline. And as we saw at the beginning of this story arc, it was the three different Thors from three different times in his life. Once predating when he was just a young, brash upstart. One, the current Thor, and then one Thor in the future where he is the All-Father. Right. This issue begins with the latter two Thors teaming up to go stop whatever Gore's plan is. And they're not even really sure what Gore's plan is. And then we find out that the younger Thor is on the planet, one of the gods that are imprisoned, building the God Bomb. This issue is so good. I would read a book that was just the two Thors together, just jibing at each other the whole time.
I totally agree. Our Thor and future Thor. And then when young Thor shows up, I love... you know, all Father Thor, just like, oh, give, you know, kind of give me strength kind of a thing. But it is kind of cool to see the three, you know, like, you know, eras of him and some of the stuff. Like, there's that cool scene, like, when they're, you know, thinking about getting ready for battle, and young Thor's just eyeing something up. And he's thinking about it, and like Thor's like, yeah, let's get out of here and do our thing. And he's like, oh, I did want to try that. But it's just cool all around, you know, the dialogue, everything about it, the look of the book, just to the villain, to how we saw, you know, Thor interacting with some of those other gods and who they were. And, you know, how the, like, what they were thinking about him before and after they find out who he is. There's just so much good in this book that I don't know where to stop talking about what's good with it.
Somebody I know said to me that they can't get into Thor just because Thor to them is boring. He's essentially a god who cannot be destroyed. And it takes, and that's kind of the way that I felt for a very long time as well. Outside of an all ages book that Marvel put out about 3 years ago, that was the only Thor that I'd read. And it was Jason Aaron coming on this book that made me read this run of Thor. And Jason Aaron is one of those creators that it doesn't matter what he's writing, I'm going to check it out. Mm-hmm. And he has made Thor awesome. He has made him a vulnerable character and yet keeping true, as far as I know, to the characterization of him and not relying on a lot of the same old tropes that a lot of people do. He has a defined threat that is a threat, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I got what you're saying. My problem with Thor always was the way he was written, you know, before the more modern Thor with the these and thous, and like reading it, it wasn't like, oh my God, I can't understand it. But I was just like, this is tedious at times. And like, I think, you know, the more modern Thor, I kind of liked. I've only read him two times, I think. But like you said, Jason Aaron's got, you know, a plan, a vision, where it's going, a legitimate threat, cool stuff. It's like, take all the cool stuff that I like from Conan and some of those other, like, you know, big, you know, like jerk books, I call them, like, you know, the characters. And he just nails it. Like, and you see progression in the character with the Allfather Thor. And, you know, it's fun. It's exciting. It looks good. Like I said, I don't know what more I can say about it.
Right. Well, you can't say it's just, because if you just say that, then you're not cool.
Yeah, that is true.
So the last book that we're going to talk about here from what we read last week is a book that only Todd read, only because I forgot that the new creative team was coming on this past week. I will be picking it up today at the store. And that is Suicide Squad number 20 by Alice Cott, who I have no idea who that is. With art by Patrick Zercher, who I remember his stuff. He had done some Thunderbolt stuff back in the day.
Right. That's what somebody was telling me the other day. I didn't know who Zercher was, but his stuff looks really nice on this. And basically, this is a nice jumping on point, because basically after all, like, you know, the story, the ongoing story that we had, and then Suicide Squad to me kind of got bogged down with the Joker storyline, because Harley Quinn was in it. They crossed it over and it really brought everything to a screeching halt. And then, you know, we kind of had some stuff finish up, and I really feel that like the rug was pulled out from under Adam Glass, the writer of this, at the end. But this issue is a nice jumping on point, because we're getting, you know, a fresh look at it, and somebody has come in to, not interview, but to review all the characters and see what's going on. And it's a dark, mysterious figure. And as he's doing it, we're getting information about each of the characters, and he's testing them in different ways. So we get to see, like, you know, how Harley Quinn would act if we would kind of push her, and then King Shark's in it, and we're learning more about King Shark, and like they send somebody into his cell to talk to him to see how he'll react. And then the other characters, and you get a good, you know, fleshing out of each of the characters. And then when you find out who the character is at the end, he's a known character from the past couple of years. And I'm like, I'm in. I want to see what this person's going to bring to the team.
Now, it was this got spoiled on me, which is okay, because it was a book that I'd totally forgotten about.
Okay.
was getting changed. So I know what the reveal is, and I'm not going to give it away here, even though it's all over the place. Even on DC's own website, they give it away, like right on the front page of their website.
Right. That's why I was trying to keep it vague.
Right. Obviously, it's just like an appearance of this person. They don't really give much more information. It's just like, find out how this person shows up, I guess, next issue, right?
I believe so, yes. I mean, they don't tell you anything about where they came from.
I wonder how this is going to play into the book where this character has been showing up lately.
Right.
And that's what's making me want to check that out, to see how they kind of tie those two books together.
Right. And I think there's a lot of cool things that you can do with this character and the other characters in Suicide Squad. And it was a good read. You know, I know whenever we talk about a villain team book, like one team automatically comes to mind. I don't know if you know the one I'm talking about.
Secret Six, of course.
Yes. You know, it's not going to live up to that. I'm going to be totally honest. But it's good. I love a good, you know, villain book. And that's what this is. And, you know, you get into their minds a little bit. And it's fun. It looks really good. So hopefully when you try it and anybody else tries it, they'll enjoy it.
Well, with this being such a light week, you know, I will be picking this one up at the store just to kind of pad my week out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not the book that I'm most looking forward to coming out this week.
Sure, because it came out last week.
Right, but I'm picking it up this week, so in my world it comes out this week.
Gotcha. I'm understanding your reality now. It's like mine.
Right.
It's what
right,
you make
exactly.
of it.
But so the book I'm most looking forward to coming out this week...
Yes.
Is a book that I'm sure will not line up with what Todd has, but that's quite all right, because it's a book that I look forward to all the time, and this is another one that I mention it only because it's a great jumping on point, and that is Wolverine and the X-Men number 29, also written by Jason Aaron, mentioned before, with art by Ramon Perez. It is a flash-forward issue where the current story arc, the students plant a time capsule. And then we jump forward to the future to see what's happened to everybody in that time frame. And I think it's going to tie up a lot of the stuff that's been going on in the book recently. And it's going to build into the new storylines with the new evil school that's being put together.
Ah, and maybe into that killable Wolverine story.
Yes, possibly. Right. And I think we'll talk about that a little bit too later.
Okay.
As well. But yeah, so Wolverine and the X-Men number 29 is the book I'm most looking forward to coming out this week. Todd, what is the book you are most looking forward to coming out this week?
Because I have a truly light week. I think I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I only have like 9 or 10 books, which is, you know, crazy. I only have 9 or 10 books. But Iron Man 10. I've been really enjoying this storyline with Iron Man, Tony Stark, you know, against this crazy robot. And I want to see where this goes. And it's the origin of Tony and see, you know, what switches and turns they might make. So that's mine.
I'll say this. This was close to being my book that I was most looking forward to this week. But if it was a better jumping on point for this new story, because the last issue was the better jumping on point, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I could see what you're saying.
Right.
But for me, you know, I just love the cliffhanger of the last issue and want to read this one.
Yes. So, again, there's a lot of good stuff coming out. And then the following 2 weeks, I am swamped with books. Swamp, swamp, swamped with books.
See, I don't know how I am because I don't have that 20, you know, week list ahead of me.
See, you need to be prepared like me.
I like winging it. I think that's the best way to go.
Just a couple other things I actually want to mention. It's not on my list of stuff to pick up, but I would be remiss to mention that this week there's tons of all ages stuff that's coming out. The first collection of My Little Pony, which is great. Todd and I got a chance to meet Katie Cook, who wrote the first story arc there for IDW. The first collection of that is coming out, as is the cartoon regular show. That is having a comic come out from Kaboom, as well as the first collection of Adventure Time. So if you're looking for a reason to get your kids to the store as well, there is something for all of your kids at the comic book store this week, whether it be My Little Pony, Adventure Time, regular show, and read them yourself, because I can speak for the My Little Pony stuff. I read it. It's good. It's not just a dumb comic for girls. It's actually a really fun, entertaining comic book.
And I'll tell you, that Adventure Time, I've never seen something like, you know, in the recently... bring so many new people in, not counting Walking Dead. I don't know how many new faces I'm seeing in the shop, like, you know, asking about Adventure Time. It's insane. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really cool. I mean, I've never read it, so I don't know. But I think it's really cool. It's something to get people in the shops.
Right. And like I said, the collection of it comes out this week. So, yeah. So definitely check that out.
Mm-hmm.
So what else do we have to talk about? Oh, yes. So sketch party stuff as well.
Right.
We got tons and tons of great sketches from our listeners. You know, Mr. Senior, always he sends us one. And what I was having problems with this one loading on my phone. I'm not sure if you knew this, Todd. My phone's a piece of garbage.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, my phone's a piece of junk, and it really upsets me.
Oh.
And I can't look at pictures sometimes. It just messes them up. So he did an Oogie Boogie from Nightmare Before Christmas, and it was really cool, a little stylized version of him there. He always does really cool art that he sends into us every week. New listener, Twitter account TOC Smell, standing for That Old Comic Smell, put up a really cool Ted Kord by Chris Giarrusso. Chris Giarrusso, he does the Mini Marvels and G-Man for Image. He has a very similar Art Balthazar and Franco design. So I really like that. Our good buddy DJ put up that awesome Fred Hembeck New Gods collage that he had got at the Reading Super Show.
Yep, he was very, very like hopeful when, you know, he got that commission and he was waiting on it. And I think Fred Hembeck did, you know, the classic Fred Hembeck. I love the little knee swirls. Those are always my favorite.
Yes, so that was really good. And we also had Todd and I had, sketches ourselves of ourselves. Yeah. And the story on that one is, I went to the shop this past week after we recorded the show, and Todd was there as well as our friend Tom Derenick, a world famous comic book artist, currently working on the Injustice book.
Yes.
Tying into the video game by DC Comics, is that correct?
Yes, and also Hypernaturals from Boom.
Yes. So Todd hands me this giant envelope with something in it. I have no idea what it is. And he proceeds to present that to me as well as his drawings that Tom did of myself as Sinestro in the current Sinestro Corps outfit and Todd as Jonah Hex. Both of our dream journals came true.
Yeah, Charlie, our dream journals.
Right. So that was an awesome surprise that really made my day. I was feeling really really down. I was not feeling well the last couple days here. And that really brightened up my day to get it. It made me very happy. I came home. I showed it to my wife. She thought it was awesome. I immediately scanned it in the computer. And it's awesome. And you are awesome for setting that up. And Tom is awesome for being such an awesome artist.
No problem. I thought you might enjoy it. I thought there was some cool stuff that we can do with it. And the best part is Tom is digitally coloring the ones that we have. So, like, we'll have, like, obviously, you know, the sketches that we have are in black and white. But he'll probably be sending us images of them colored. So I think that's really cool. He hasn't decided on whether or not to make your face red yet. I'm not sure. So I don't know what way you want to go with that. So maybe we'll tell him if we see him tomorrow.
He's the artist. I say he uses his best judgment. I have faith in him.
That's what I said. He was like, oh, Todd, what do you... I'm like, do what you do. You know, as long as, you know, you put Leonard in the Sinestro Core outfit, because I made sure I asked, you know, slyly which one was your favorite, the classic Sinestro Circus outfit or the Sinestro Core one.
Mm-hmm.
So, glad you enjoyed
it. But yes. So again, thank you very much for that, and hopefully we get those colored, and maybe when it gets a little bit closer to the 100th show, that'll be like an anniversary mashup image for a new logo or something.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
We'll have some fun.
Mm-hmm.
So again, thanks to everyone for contributing to Sketch Party. We still need to figure out a new hashtag. I am open to suggestions. Because it keeps fouling up with somebody else's sketch party thing. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, but who cares with them? But yeah, if we have to think up something, I was trying. I couldn't come up with any cool names. But if anybody's got any ideas, throw them in and we'll give it another go, me and you.
Yep. And you can always email me your sketches if you want to have them included and mentioned in the show notes. My email address is lfchikarison. That's LFCHIKARASON at ymail.com. But of course, the preferred method to contact the show, myself, and Todd would be through Twitter. The show's Twitter is Weekly Longbox. Todd's Twitter is Roker the Joker, and that's R-O-W-K-E-R, the Joker. And I am the same spelling of LF Chikar as I just said a moment ago on Twitter.
Yeah, I think that'll work for you.
And that's the best way to interact with us, whether it be Sketch Party, whether it be in general. I saw one of our listeners contacted us via the Weekly Longbox one about going to a convention and how to handle getting sketches and things like that. And I saw that one come up, and I'm like, I'm not going to touch that one. I'm going to let the professional handle it.
I thought I did pretty good.
Yes. If there's anyone to ask about going to a convention and not being a jerk to the other people, getting sketches, good con etiquette, that would be Todd personified.
Yay. Wait, you said I'm not a jerk, right?
Right. Okay, no, gotcha. Goodness, no.
I was worried there for a second. Let me wipe the sweat away from my brow. Okay.
So, the other way is to get in touch with us through Twitter for our Twitter question. And our last week question was, as I mentioned earlier this week, who is the dirt worst member of the Justice League of all time? Who is the shame of the Justice League? And we had people flip-flopping. We had people changing their mind, going back and forth. We had people who I didn't even know that were on the Justice League, to be completely honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had people, you know, mention Blue Jay, you know, the aforementioned, Mr. Senior mentioned Blue Jay, and I thought he was just on the Global Guardians. I didn't think he was on the Justice League proper.
Okay, let me school you, Leonard.
All right, go ahead.
Blue Jay wasn't a Global Guardian. Do you remember early in Justice League International, before it was Justice League International, the first six issues, those Marvel-esque heroes came over to destroy all the nuclear reactors and missiles.
Yeah.
That's where Blue Jay's from.
Oh, okay.
He's kind of like a Wasp meets Ant-Man character of that.
Right. No. I know who Blue Jay is. I just didn't know he was an actual member of the Justice League.
Yeah, later on he became part of Justice League Europe. So.
Gotcha. You know, Mystic, who I have no idea who that is. Quinn the Eskimo on Twitter mentioned that one. Agent Liberty. Oh, come on. I like Agent Liberty. That's terrible to say Agent Liberty.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Michael Lee Carter, another new listener, mentioned Sister Superior, a.k.a. Vera Black, sister of Manchester Black from that great action comic Superman story. Now say she was a member of Justice League Elite. Which I have not read, but I'll take your word. Just the name alone makes her sound like a bunch of junk to me. Some people had some good choices in regards to who were terrible members of the Justice League. Aztec. His story was cool, but, you know, in the purpose of the... For storyline purposes, he was a terrible member of the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was the made-up superhero for, you know, Lex Luthor, kind of funded him behind the scenes, got him on the Justice League, so Luthor would have his own superhero on the Justice League. So that in and of itself makes him a bad superhero, and therefore shouldn't have been on the Justice League, but it was a really cool story.
I don't remember that much. I remember the Aztec series by Grant Morrison, mm-hmm. but I don't remember.
This was after the series got canceled and Morrison was writing Justice League.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I figured. I remember him coming on for a little bit, but yeah, go ahead.
DJ mentioned, the aforementioned DJ, our good buddy, mentioned Catwoman. Should not be a member of any, Catwoman should not be a member of any Justice League team, whether it be the old Grant Morrison backup team, the current Justice League of America team. Kevin Hellions, another longtime listener, mentioned Maxima. She was a pretty terrible character. I don't know if terrible by standards of the Justice League, but I think just terrible in general.
Mm-hmm. It was the...
Go ahead.
Dan Juergens' run when he was writing Justice League Maxima was, I think.
Right, I think that was when it was Extreme Justice, maybe, was the book.
No, it was Justice League America. It was right after Keith Giffen left and jammed
him. But wasn't it, like, retitled at some point to... I know there was Justice League Task Force, and then there was an Extreme Justice book, maybe?
They were all going on at the same time.
Oh, good grief.
Oh, there was like a Justice League book a week. It was crazy.
A couple people said Vibe, and I say to you, for shame. For shame saying Vibe. That's terrible. Vibe is awesome. And I think if you're saying Vibe, you're just saying Vibe to like kind of be like, yeah, it's cool to make fun of Vibe. It's not cool to make fun of Vibe. Vibe is pretty awesome.
It is hip to make fun of Justice League Detroit. It always was, but, you know, it was a decent little run.
That's right. Nobody said Sergeant Steel. Nobody said Gypsy. You know, I think they're just picking on Vibe to pick on Vibe.
I think somebody said Vixen, though.
Right. Vixen did get a couple mentions there. Now, these are the people. This is the part where we mention people who are wrong.
Dead wrong. I know where you're going.
Right. There was a bunch of people who were completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Peck, HH2 News on Twitter, he said Fire and Ice, you're wrong. Fire and Ice are awesome. A linchpin of Justice League International.
Yes. Totally agree with you.
Dave Kincannon, DWKII on Twitter, mentioned Elongated Man. You were wrong as well.
Totally agree. You were wrong.
Elongated Man is awesome. Justice League Europe, the classic Justice League from the 70s. He was awesome on all of those. But the person who was the most wrong is my good friend Ryan Fisher, who I was going to mention this to him, but he was actually in a dream of mine the other night. And I don't very often remember my dreams, and this much has been foretelling him doing this just to torment us. He had said he had said Booster Gold is the worst member of the Justice League of all time.
I think he's just trying to get under my skin for a few...
I think he's trying to get under the skin of the show. That's how you get banned for life.
I was going to say, do we have the banned button yet?
Oh, we're getting it. We're getting it. Once we build up enough money from our sponsors, we're going to get a ban button.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, goodness. But in all seriousness, I do appreciate everyone for contributing. The far and away winner, though, from our listeners was Blue Devil. A lot of people said Blue Devil was a terrible character, and I just don't think he's a... I don't think he's a terrible superhero. He's more of a mystically superhero. Just not the right fit for the Justice League, in my opinion.
Right. And then even before he was a mystical hero, he was like kind of like an Iron Man character. Do you remember that?
No. Well, I thought he was a stuntman.
Right. He was a stuntman who had an armored costume.
Oh, good Lord.
That was like a second skin, and they were making a Blue Devil movie, and he got blasted with something, and kind of like the Rhino, it fused to his body. And he couldn't get it off. And then later he made, I think, a deal with Neron or something and became a mystical character. So for a while there, it was just all mechanical. Yeah.
He's got a lot of gimmicks going on, this guy.
He does. I mean, that's how you win the comic books. You have the gimmicks.
I guess. So, again, there was a lot of good choices. A couple people did pick my choice, and my pick for the worst member of the Justice League. And the way I looked at it was, I've read a lot of Justice League comics, and I think to myself, who is a member of the Justice League that I can't for the life of me think of a story that they were in that was either compelling, that hinged on them being there, or made me care about them as a person? Or what may have you.
Mm-hmm.
And the one person that came to mind was Red Tornado. Ooh. Red Tornado is the worst member of the Justice League in the history of the Justice League. He stinks.
You are going to get big brownie points for Dave with that.
Yeah?
He's a Red Tornado hater. I understand your hate for Red Tornado and some other people because his stories consist of three things. Trying to find my human side.
Right.
Being blown up and being put back together. That's it. That's your three Red Tornado stories.
You can throw the one in there of him, the 3A, I guess, is him being reprogrammed for evil.
Right. And then usually exploding because it contradicts with his programming. But that's not mine. Actually, I kind of... I give Red Tornado a pass because I always liked his look, as grungy as his story is, and I never got into it. I kind of always liked the classic look of Red Tornado, but for me, it had to be Congo-Rilla.
Oh, I think we had somebody mention Congo-Rilla. Yeah, Zeus Ramos mentioned Congo-Rilla.
And that was during the really good shortly after Cry for Justice run, which was amazing. And then we had the short run after it. My runner-up was Cyborg, but I went with Congo-Rilla. The reason I don't like Cyborg is because I think he has and always will be a Titan.
Yeah.
But I figure when you said dirt worst, I was like, that's not a reason to be dirt worst, but it comes to Kongorilla, I don't even know. Like you said, never mind a story where, you know, he's done anything. Show me one story before Justice League that anybody can point out as a Kongorilla story. So,
well, he wasn't in the Justice League for very long, and it was the pre-52 run of things, so not a lot of people read it or remember it. I do want to say that we also got you mentioned Kongorilla. We did get a last-minute submission as the show was going to tape here from longtime listener John Seiler, who mentioned, can we just say James Robinson is the shame of the Justice League?
That was a bad run, yeah.
Well, and I think that's one of those runs that was kind of hampered by a lot of editorial decision-making out of his control, a lot of writing on the wall of like, well, you tell whatever story you want because none of it's going to matter anyway.
And not only that, that was when... But that was a little longer than you think, I believe. But that was also when Dick Grayson was Batman. Mon-El was Superman. I'm trying to remember. Wonder Woman was that wacky...
Donna Troy.
Was Donna Troy in the book because it was the alternate Wonder Woman running around. So, like, you had, like the second string of first stringers, if you will. On that team, and I think that really hurt it because you couldn't put any of the main characters in that people, like, you know, go to the Justice League for.
Well, I think that's it's kind of an interesting idea that he had there, where it was the second generation heroes were finally moving up to the Justice League, and I think there's a cool story to be told there. It's just maybe Robinson wasn't the one to tell it.
I agree. But I do think you need your mix of big guns and, second tier characters to make it more interesting. But that's just my opinion.
So I do, again, thank everyone for contributing to this past week's Twitter question. And this is an extra long episode here because we still have our movie spoiler stuff to talk about. So I'll be as quick as I can here. Next week's question, and this is when I flip-flop back and forth on how I was going to word it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best way to word it is, in the history of comicdom, we have seen heroes become villains and villains become heroes. But villains, more often than not, sometimes have a change of heart and become heroes. Who are the villains to you that work better as heroes?
Ooh, interesting.
Whether they started off as a villain, became a hero, initially started off as ambiguous, there's someone who's considered a villain by the general populace, whether it be the comic book reading folk or the people in the books themselves, but you think they're better as a hero than they are as a villain.
That was going to make me think a while.
Yes, this is a difficult one for me too.
But you have an answer because you thought up the question.
I think so. I think so. I have to dig out some old books, but I have an idea. A few I have to narrow it down to.
I think mine's Kongorilla.
So, yeah, just let us know who you think is a villain who ended up working out better as a hero. Just throw the hashtag GrizzWLQ on there. I will track them all down, compile them, and we'll have some interesting discussion about them right here next week.
Yay.
So, speaking of next week, if you do want to avoid the spoilers of the big movies that have come out lately that Todd and I have gotten a chance to see, this is your time to tune out. We'll catch you here next week for episode 79. I do thank everyone for listening, and we're going to give you a few second pause to get ready to delve deep into spoiler discussion. All right, so let's get into it. I know, Todd, you got a chance to see it before I did.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
And, of course, the movie that we're talking about, based on the 1925 novel The Great Gatsby, Baz Luhrmann's The Great Gatsby, came out in theaters. And Todd, I know you enjoyed it just as much as I did.
Hey, an American classic brought to the big screen.
Right. The costuming was beautiful, the choice of music, the back and forth between the classical and the current hip-hop was just all so amazing to me.
You know what? It really did bring a punch to an old book. I think it's really what it needed. And I mean, the chemistry between most of the characters. I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio, who he's one of our generation's greatest actors.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. It was just a phenomenal movie. And, the costuming, I'm sure it's going to be up for, you know, Academy Awards for costume design, you know, sets and all that sort of thing. Just a visual feast, if you will.
Hey, I look at it as the role that made me forget Tobey Maguire was Spider-Man, which I really think he needed. You know,
right.
Because you get typecast and that kind of stuff. And then you have this, like, you know, you can act, you know, bigger, better, and it just works for him. And I think it will keep him from being typecast as Spider-Man.
Of course, Todd and I are lying. Neither one of us saw Great Gatsby.
That's right.
I thought this would be a funny joke.
That's right.
We actually went to go see Iron Man 3.
Okay. I saw it.
And hunker down, Todd, because it's going to be a long discussion.
Is it really?
It is. Because you have to remember, the last movie I saw in the theaters was Dark Knight Rises.
Wow.
I don't watch trailers anymore.
Right.
So all the trailers that were on before Iron Man 3, I was seeing for the first time.
Which I was kind of the same way on some of them. I don't know which ones you got because somebody told me they mixed in and mixed out ones. But I think I got definitely the Thor one I saw for the first time,
yep.
Which I thought was really good. I can't remember what else. I got a Star Trek one.
Didn't get the Star Trek one. I didn't get the Pacific Rim one. But I did get pretty much all of the other big ones. I got the Wolverine one, which touches on, you know, the storyline that's coming up, which is kind of cool that, you know, they tease that they're doing the story that Wolverine is going to be killable.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the plot for the new Wolverine movie is that, like, he finds a way to become normal and, you know, obviously therefore killable, if you will.
Right, and he may have acquired a few enemies along the way, so out of the woodwork they come.
Right. So I also saw the Man of Steel trailer for the first time, and boy oh boy, I am glad I did not see that trailer for the first time on my computer screen. Now, I don't have a huge computer, but I don't have a little tiny laptop or anything. You know, it's an average-size computer with an average-size screen. And that, to me, seems like a trailer that needs to be seen in a movie that needs to be seen on the big screen.
I did not get the Man of Steel trailer, so I haven't seen it yet, big screen or small screen.
Okay. Now, the two that I actually want to talk to you about are one of them that you had mentioned earlier, which was Fast 6.
Mm-hmm.
Fast and the Furious 6. And White House Down. Have you seen the trailer for this movie, White House Down, Todd?
No, I haven't. Is it about, like, a hoedown at the White House?
Do you know the premise of this movie, Todd?
No, I don't. I'm guessing someone takes over the White House?
Yes. Just as there are 16 different end-of-the-world movies this summer, there are two distinctly different People Attack the White House movies. One was Olympus Has Fallen, which came out a couple months ago. And then there's this one that comes out later this summer, starring Channing Tatum as a meathead who goes for a job as Secret Service at the White House, and Jamie Foxx, who is the president.
Ooh, sounds riveting.
Now, the first half of the trailer, do yourself a favor later and check this trailer out online.
Okay.
The first half of the trailer certainly makes this movie seem like your atypical action movie. It's like, oh, he's down on his luck, he's trying to impress his kid, so on and so forth. And then when the attack on the White House happens, it somehow becomes like a slapstick comedy.
No.
It's very odd. It's a very odd tonal shift in the trailer,
mm-hmm.
which makes me think if the movie has the same odd tonal shift, not unlike that of From Dusk Till Dawn.
That's exactly what I was thinking. There's that moment you can almost snap your fingers in From Dusk Till Dawn where it goes from a road heist movie to a horror movie.
And that's how this trailer goes. It goes from your generic actioner to a slapstick comedy on a dime. It just shifts.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie was not on my radar at all. I had no idea this movie existed. After seeing this trailer, I am almost as intrigued by this movie as any other summer movie.
Are you going to do a Thursday 10 o'clock movie to see it?
I don't know. That's pushing it.
I don't know. The way you sound pumped for it. So, and I know you, the Channing Tatum fan that you are. Is that his name?
Channing Tatum. That's correct.
Okay. I know you're a big fan of his. Didn't you go, weren't you, are you sure the last movie you didn't see was G.I. Joe 2 in the theaters?
No, I wish I did. I wish I had the time to go see G.I. Joe 2 in the theaters.
Gotcha.
I'll just watch G.I. Joe 1 on Netflix instant and thumb myself in the eye so it looks like it's double vision.
Gotcha.
And it's like, oh, it's two G.I. Joes.
Yay. Maybe have your wife sneak up and hit you with a frying pan.
There you go. So getting to the actual movie itself, Iron Man 3. I avoided almost everything about this movie, except one of our listeners who, not this past Monday, but the previous Monday, just decided to start tweeting everything that happened in the movie during the course of me being on Twitter during a Monday night during Raw.
That must have been fun.
That was very upset. I had to just, like, close things out. It was nothing that I was surprised about, because having avoided everything about the movie but knowing enough about the Iron Man comic books, once they started talking about the Extremis Project, I knew what the plot of the movie was.
I had never read Extremis, so I was going in completely blank.
Right. So, but that was good because I knew it was a good story, but the story to me, the movie was less about the Extremis stuff and more about all the Tony Stark stuff.
You mean S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Tony Stark without his armor?
Well, again, it's... there needs to be a reason why Tony Stark is different from the Avengers. As we had mentioned before about how friends of mine say they can't get into Thor because Thor is boring. He's just a god.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have other friends who are like, well, you know, of course, what place does Tony Stark have in the greater scheme of the Avengers when the Avengers team has an indestructible Hulk on their team? And this movie, I think, deals with that. And I think it deals with that in as real as a way as it can in a fanciful comic book movie world.
Okay.
Did you not like that?
Let's put it this way. When you asked me what I thought of the movie last week, I kind of just threw out I liked it because there was nothing that I could talk about without being not spoiling something. Do you know what I mean? I really like the movie up until the house goes into the ocean.
Okay.
I think that is one of the most brilliant scenes where he does the thing to protect Pepper over everything. And I'm like, this is beautiful. This is touching. This is a beautiful sequence. And then once he kind of lands in that town and we get the plucky kid... and, you know, I like the post, you know, traumatic stress syndrome, but I looked at it more as with Iron Man, you have the perfect vehicle to have the person in the costume, but show their face too, because they have that cool shot where they use it in the comic where they show Tony's face. And I'm like, and it was like, oh, he's out of the costume. It's remote control. And once you do that, what do you need Tony for? Do you know what I mean? The costume, well, there's no danger to Tony. He can build costumes and he doesn't even need to be in. And by costumes, I mean armors. But and that kind of lost me. I just kind of thought it was, I don't know. I like this movie, and the more I think about it, the less I like it. It's one of those that I could tear it completely apart.
Now, see, I really liked it. I understand what you're coming from. Like, once Tony's out of the armor, what does it matter? But at this point, the technology for him to do so is not perfected, and the reason it's not perfected is because he has the post-traumatic stress thing going on. He can't focus on things. Obviously, Pepper, you know, it was a long movie. I felt there should have been more to kind of get across the relationship with Pepper. I would have liked more of that in this movie. This is one of the few superhero movies where the love story part doesn't feel as tacked on as it does in some others, like Cap or Thor.
I totally agree. I think it's more natural than any. Like, it's the Tony Pepper love story in the Iron Man movies is almost more natual than love stories in actual romantic movies.
Yes.
So. But
I really liked Guy Pearce as the creepy villain. His hair and his suits, he was just like a smarmy creep. He just wanted to punch in the face every time he was on the screen.
Yeah, I guess. No.
So I'm taking it you didn't like this movie as much as I did. But again, maybe it's just because I don't get out much.
I didn't like it as much as you did. I mean, I'm going to go down, like we've already gotten to this part. I'm going to just go right into the meat of the potatoes of the three things that I didn't like in order of importance.
Go ahead.
Three, Iron Man at the end doing the big fight. against the AIM guy. You said his name. I felt at no point was Tony in any danger, because he had so many suits flying around that anytime he jumped out of one, he jumped back into another one. And then on top of that, like, Pepper just goes crazy at the end because she's an extremist. I was like, this is, like, out of left field, and, you know, all this happens. And then at the end, we kind of have him in the last 2 minutes of the movie go, oh, by the way, I've cured Pepper, then I've cured myself, and then I throw possibly the most powerful power source in the world into the ocean. And I was like, what? This movie just ended abruptly. I thought it was just, I didn't know what was happening. I'll let you, if you want to take that one first before I get into the other two.
Well, I think they could have, I understand what you're coming from with the suits. I thought him jumping in and out of the suits was really cool. It was a really cool visual. And they could have just very easily thrown like a Jarvis-y thing in there and said like, sir, you're running out of suits, you know? And, like, that could have added a little bit more tension to the scene.
Right. But then by the end of the scene, you could still see all the suits flying around and he blows them up. You know what I mean? So
right.
He had, like, at least a dozen more, it felt like. Because he had – the way they made it sound is, like, between, you know, Mark – like she said early in the movie, was that Mark 15? And it was Mark 40. So I felt he had, like, 30 suits of armor. But that was one of the problems. Like you said, Pepper real quick, and then he cures himself. I was like, okay, I guess. You know, we haven't even talked about him ever curing himself. But then the second part is the Mandarin.
Okay.
And who's the guy who played the fake?
Ben Kingsley.
Ben Kingsley played the fake version. Dave said it best. He goes, the movie gets flushed down the toilet when Ben Kingsley flushes the toilet. because he comes out and he's this wacky thing. And I get it, because people who have never seen the Mandarin or know who he is might think that's funny and great. And then people tell me, oh, Todd, you know, you can't get into change. But I'm like, I had no problem that Jarvis isn't a human. You know what I mean? He's a program inside Tony's helmet. I just think it was really dumb. I don't mind the Jarvis because it's cool. But the whole thing, I was like, wow, you just really... killed the Mandarin. And then at the end when he's saying, oh, I was the Mandarin the whole time, I'm like, no, you weren't. You weren't the Mandarin.
See, to me, not having read a ton of Mandarin story stuff, I know there's been more recent stuff that Fraction did with it that kind of gave the character a little bit more, I guess, a reboot, if you will.
Right.
Okay. But the Mandarin's origin is like, so bad, like so racist and so like not PC to do him as a character in the movie. I think this was the best way that they could do it. And I kind of sort of figured the fix was in, but I thought it was funny. I thought all the stuff with the reveal with Ben Kingsley just being like a down in his luck, drunk, drugged out actor. And then him, of course, with the paparazzi, he thinks it's another shot at fame, of course. That's why he's like, oh, I was the guy all along. I enjoyed his turn as the Mandarin.
Right. But as you're saying, the Mandarin is this and the Mandarin is racist and all that, why couldn't you just do what you were doing with the Mandarin in the movie, which I thought was cool? Now, granted, you didn't have to maybe have magical rings or anything, but... I thought the Mandarin was a great character, you know, being a terrorist, and I thought it was a nice switch on the, you know, what's, you know, modern day stuff. And then you had to make him Ben Kingsley, the acting idiot. And I was like, I didn't like that because I liked the Mandarin up until that point. And that's kind of my take on that.
Okay.
And the number one problem that I had was there was no AC/DC song in the movie. Done. We're out. So
yeah, there was somebody had pointed out to me that the song that they used at the beginning of it, they didn't like very much, but I couldn't tell the song from one or the other. And you know, it was, my wife pointed it out to me. It was odd that it was a summer movie. Like they do this all the time, but it's been a while since I've noticed it, but it was a summer movie and it takes place at Christmas time.
Well, that's the director's motif. I don't know if you know that.
Right, Shane Black.
Shane Black, okay, because he did Lethal Weapon, which takes place at Christmas. Didn't he do Kiss Bang? Does Kiss Bang Bang take place?
Yes.
So, and then there's a third movie that he did, I can't think off the top of my list, that he did at Christmas. So when I saw this was a Christmas-based movie, I was like, okay, that's, I get it. That's his thing. And that doesn't bother me, but, you know, so I was like, whatever. You know, I like I said, I thought it was cool up until around the time he gets unconscious and flies across country. And then I'd really understand the real Mandarin's story, because I think they cut some stuff out. Like, I wasn't sure, obviously, he was trying to sell the extremist stuff, you know, that he was going to make it terrorist stuff and blah, blah, blah. And he would have that sewn up. But then how he was going to be a weapons guy for the government. I guess he was working for the vice president to have, because he said he was going to have both sides of the war on terror.
Well, right. He was going to have the Mandarin as the figurehead of the terror side.
Right.
And with the president being captured, and he was going to have the Mandarin kill the president on TV, the vice president now becomes the president. He's got the vice president in his back pocket because he's going to give his daughter a leg through the extremist project.
Right.
And so that would be his control over the new president coming in.
I guess. Okay. I thought it was a very vague plan. I thought it was a very, like, thrown in at the end kind of, I don't know. The movie kind of lost me, but apparently you would enjoy it, and that's cool.
Yes, I enjoyed it. I would go see it again, and, you know, obviously, I am not one of those people that would bring my young child to a movie. There were a lot of people there that had small children there, even a baby in a little basket, like a little infant at the theater. But every time Iron Man was on there doing something awesome, I just thought of the baby at home being like, oh, he'd love this. Oh, he'd love this. He wouldn't sit still for no 2.5-hour movie, but he'd love this.
Maybe you should just get, you know, a Chikarisen private screening.
Maybe. Again, I think, because, like, he watches Avengers, but he just watches, like, the scenes where Iron Man does stuff and Hulk does stuff and this one does stuff and that one does stuff. He can't sit still.
Right.
For the entire movie. But if I can just get the pieces of the Iron Man movie where Iron Man's doing stuff, I think he'd be all for it.
Right, when he's in the costume occasionally.
Right.
Gotcha.
So, oh, it breaks my heart that you didn't like it, though.
Well, you can't like all of them, you know what I mean?
No.
I didn't hate it, but like I said, it's just one of those, I don't know if you've ever had that with a movie where afterwards you're just like,
Yeah, the more and more you think about it, the more and more holes you see in it.
Right,
yes.
Right. And things that I didn't like. But like right. I said, it's something that I would probably watch again on FX, and I'll probably give it another go, because I didn't like Iron Man 2, not as much as I didn't like Iron Man 3, but now I love Iron Man 2, so.
Yeah, see, Iron Man 2 is one I only saw the one time. I haven't seen that one again.
Right.
Maybe that one needs a second viewing as well. Mm-hmm. All right, well, we ran extra long here with all this talk about movies and stuff. We're not going to have another long episode like this probably until Man of Steel comes out.
Right, and that's one of them that you probably do the Thursday night showing, you were saying, so that might
be... I'm hoping. I'm going to pull some strings to make sure I'm there, because I want to see that one as spoiler-free as possible, and I think if I have to wait any longer than that opening weekend, I'm going to get myself in a boatload of trouble.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. All right, so Todd, anything you want to close things out with?
Other than you should always have AC/DC in your Marvel movies, no.
All right, well, again, for Todd, this is Leonard closing out episode 78 of the Weekly Long Box. I do thank everyone for listening. We will catch you all here next week.